This podcast is for general information only. It is not intended as a substitute for general healthcare services. If you have medical conditions, you need to see your doctor. Use of this information is at the user's own risk. Welcome to FitRx with Dr. Greg Dennis. Join me as we challenge the standard sick model of healthcare. This is your source for everything health, wellness, prevention, fitness, biohacking, and more. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of FitRx. I'm your host, Dr. Greg Dennis. I'm excited for my conversation today. As most of you probably know, if you've listened to any of my podcasts, I am a big advocate of a mostly animal-based diet, and that's what I do personally. And I've talked on here before about the benefits of that. And I really do believe, and all the time I've been researching this and doing this as far as just health longevity, I really feel like it's the best way to eat. And so our guest today is Ashley Van Houten. She is an author, a speaker, a podcast host, a health coach. She's a leading authority on understanding the nutrient density of animal protein. And so she's going to just talk to us about, you know, kind of how she came to that conclusion that meat is healthy. And also we're going to talk about her newest book, which is called It Takes Guts. And so it is a nose-to-tail organ meat-centric cookbook. And so I'm excited to hear more about that. So Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat. It's always nice to speak to somebody who I don't have to convince too hard already about how I eat. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah, well, talk about that. So, you know, you look like a very healthy person, but I mean, when did that start for you? You know, when did you first kind of start eating this way and discover this? And then I want to get further into like organ meats and stuff later, but how did all this journey start for you?
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because as you were kind of doing your intro, it made me realize how interesting it is that, you know, I get asked a lot, and I think a lot of us in this sort of, I don't know, primal, ancestral, animal protein based world, we get asked a lot, like how you came to the conclusion that this was healthy, or what in your life kind of brought you to this place. And it's interesting that it requires an explanation when really we should be asking how did people get to like a vegan, completely processed, what got you to that point? Because that's so much further away from really what human beings have always eaten. So for me to kind of get to the place where I eat the way I do now, it was really just kind of listening to my body and using common sense, I gotta say. Like, I feel like we tie ourselves in knots trying to figure out the latest fad or the latest trend or how we can use science or technology to optimize our health, when at the end of the day, I mean, science and technology is fantastic, and we have so much more access to things that we didn't have in centuries and generations past. But at the end of the day, this ancestral wisdom and the way that our bodies were kind of created and evolved to eat is really sort of, I think, the foundation and the baseline for how most people should eat. And, you know, I agree with you that I think most people would benefit from a animal protein centric, and I take it a step further with organ meats diet. I don't think everyone has to eat exactly the same. I don't think everyone's plate should look like mine. But I do think that, you know, we're omnivores, that's the science of it. And focusing on the most nutrient dense, whole, unprocessed foods that we can possibly eat just makes sense. And I really, ever since I cared about nutrition on any level, that was always what made sense to me. And that's sort of started probably around my early to mid 20s. You know, I got out of university and I was always into fitness and I always liked to eat, but it wasn't until, you know, you get out of maybe college or university and you start to realize that you need to think about what you're eating a little bit if you want to feel good, if you want to look good. And around that time, I had discovered sort of the paleo movement, that paleo kind of approach to eating, which again, just made a whole lot of sense to me. That's kind of still probably the closest description to how I eat. And around that time, professionally, I was kind of moving into this realm of sort of journalism and writing and podcast hosting and interviewing people and kind of just melding the things I was good at, which was writing and communicating and sharing information, with the things I was interested in, which was fitness and wellness and nutrition. And so all of this kind of stuff was happening, and I was evolving and learning and meeting people and interviewing all these big names in like ancestral health and primal nutrition and all of those things. And as kind of time was progressing and I was growing and learning, it sort of again made sense to me to explore how I can eat the way I'm eating in the most sustainable, healthy, ethical way possible. And that conclusion led me to truly nose to tail eating, which includes organ meats. And so I realized, and this was like, this brings us to the pandemic when everyone's kind of stuck in their house. And I realized that maybe there was a niche, there was an opportunity here, because organ meat cookbooks don't really exist. You know, there's some out there that are like French and Italian trained chefs who make these fantastic, amazing recipes that where, you know, it's kind of like for people who already are in that world, but for the rest of us who maybe are interested, intimidated, don't really know where to start, I wanted to create a resource for people who were interested and just wanted to learn a little bit more and maybe kind of open their mind to new experiences. So that's sort of how I got to writing the book.
Okay. Well, very good. Yeah. I'm very interested in the book just for myself, because people may have heard me say it on here. I don't know if I've said it on here or not, but you know, one of my kind of New Year's resolutions was to eat more organ meats. I mean, I was already kind of primarily animal, you know, based, but I wanted to eat more organ meats. And it's hard to find recipes and know what to do with some of this stuff. So I think it's cool that you did it, and I know I'm going to order the book for me personally.
You're exactly the person I wrote it for. You know? Like that's the thought process I'm thinking of when I wrote this book. I'm like, cause I went through the exact same thing and there wasn't a book for me. So I did the research and the work and I wrote it.
Yeah. I think it's great. I smoked my first heart just a couple of weeks ago and it was fantastic. And so now that's kind of motivated me even more to branch out and try different things and see what I can do with them. So,
awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. You made an interesting point that, you know, people that eat mostly an animal based and especially organ meats, that it's so far out of the norm. You know, people ask, you know, maybe why you eat like that, but you're right. It really should be the other way around. So it's interesting of kind of how that has shifted, you know, over the years. So, talk about as far as your diet. So you said you kind of started more paleo, and then are you still kind of more paleo? I know you, so you also wrote a book or co-authored a book called Carnivore-ish. If I had to kind of sum up my diet, if you will, it would be kind of carnivore-ish. I'm certainly not a strict carnivore, but it's more carnivore-ish. And so talk about kind of how you would define carnivore-ish and is that kind of how you eat?
Yeah. So I guess I would describe how I eat as carnivore-ish. You know, we wrote this book and called it carnivore-ish because ultimately what we're talking about is just well-rounded, varied, whole food based meals that are very animal protein centric, which really is quite quote unquote normal compared to the stuff that I'm normally cooking and writing about. But things have to kind of have a trendy name to them or else people don't pay attention. Like a cookbook with the title saying like healthy food that has protein in it, like that doesn't have the same ring to it, which is why we called it carnivore-ish. And it's kind of like this cheeky response to anybody that's listening to this podcast probably right now who's interested in nutrition knows that we're just in this really divisive time, right? Where everybody kind of wants to pick a team and pick a side. And we all want to belong. That's another kind of ancestral tenet that I think makes sense. It's very instinctive for us to like pick groups based on, you know, a variety of factors and feel like we belong and be in that group. But when it comes to food, really aligning yourself with like a particular title or group. Mm-hmm. Like, it can be problematic for so many reasons. One, because we just shouldn't assign our worth or anyone else's worth based on how we decide to eat. And two, because even if you eat carnivore-ish and I eat carnivore-ish, it's still going to look different because we're bio-individual. We have access to different things. We have different goals. We have different bodies, different preferences, all of those things. So I would still say I eat paleo. I would also say I eat carnivore-ish, which basically means that my plate usually mostly has meat on it and often will have a little bit of vegetable, a little bit of extra added fat somewhere. I'll eat some fruit sometimes. I rarely eat fruit, but I found I had a baby 9 months ago and that was something that I kind of started craving. I was eating a little bit more fruit. And so now I've kind of, I don't know, it's just sort of into my diet now. And you know, nuts and seeds, and I'll even eat carb sources that are not vegetable based that I have, that I found that I tolerate and that I enjoy. Like oatmeal is a staple that I will add, especially again, during my pregnancy and postpartum. I'm breastfeeding, I'm, you know, burning through a lot more calories, I'm craving more carbs, and I listen to my body and I eat more carbs. But generally speaking, I eat a lot more protein and certainly a lot more animal protein than maybe mainstream diets would call for. And again, you know, in the women's nutrition and fitness world, and that's a world that I try to speak to a lot, because I think women are the ones who are marketed to the most heavily about how to eat and why to eat that way, and kind of ascribing these like moral or like judgment based values on eating light and eating vegan and eating plant based and all of those things. And I think it's just such a disservice to so many women, and is so problematic. And so I'm really just trying to be like one small voice in this sea of plant-based salad advertisements, just saying like, if your body is telling you to eat more, if you're hungry, to eat protein, to eat red meat, if you're craving a burger, there's, your body is telling you something. And so anyway, I guess I kind of went off on a tangent, but yeah, I eat a lot of meat. I eat a lot of animal products, quite varied though. Like, I'm not just somebody, you know, another thing, when you think carnivore, you think of these men on social media eating just ground beef every day or like raw liver. I eat a lot of seafood. I eat a lot of fish. I eat chicken. I eat other poultry. I eat a lot of game meat. I really try to vary it because this is my life. This isn't like a strict diet that I do for 3 months a year to get lean or something. This is how I eat. And I want to enjoy it and I want it to be fun and delicious. And that's what carnivore-ish is about too. It's not like very few people are going to thrive and enjoy eating a really, really hyper strict, restrictive diet. So finding a way to be healthy and still enjoy it really is the goal, I think.
Yeah. I think that's great. And that's a very important point. I was just having this conversation with a patient the other day that you're talking about, you know, being in groups. And I think people get too caught up into, oh, I'm keto or I'm carnivore or whatever. What I've seen is that, you know, when people are real dogmatic about that, and then they go to a birthday party and they have a birthday cake, and then they're like, oh crap, well, I can't do this keto thing, so I'm just gonna go back to eating crap. I'm just gonna eat whatever. And so, you know, if they, you know, didn't, I guess if they weren't thinking about being in that so dogmatic and being in that particular group, but just instead having general fundamentals of not eating processed foods, most of your calories coming more from animal-based. I mean, this is kind of what I tell people. I think that's just better for long-term success, you know, rather than, oh, I'm going to do carnivore for, you know, X amount of time, because they're just going to fall off. And that's been my experience. Yours as well, or
yeah. And I mean, it sounds so simple, right? Like, I'm sure you've said this before and people have heard it before. It's simple. That doesn't make it easy. It's a lot in my experience. Like, I'm a health coach as well, and I work with clients one-on-one. And even in, I have a strength and muscle building program for women that I host a couple times a year. And, you know, people I have found really actually do quite well temporarily following very, very hyper strict challenging nutrition and strength programs, because when someone just lays everything out for you and tells you this is what you have to do, you can't do anything else. You can only eat this, you can't eat anything else. People can follow that until, as you said, they don't and they fall off, right? But if you want to work with someone to help them find their optimal nutrition plan, so not just keto, never eat a carb again, or not just carnivore, only eat meat, or the opposite of that. If you say, we have to find the kind of holistic, sustainable, flexible diet that works best for you, that allows you to have some treats every now and then, that allows the keto people to have a piece of fruit every now and then, that allows carnivore people to eat some vegetable, whatever. That's a lot more work. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of dedication. It takes paying attention to how you respond to different foods. It kind of forces you to find your own definition of like moderation and recognize that you're not perfect and you're never going to eat perfectly all the time. So how do you make that work with your other goals of maybe looking a certain way or performing a certain way? It's really not easy. And we're all in the process of it. But I think that, you know, when I work with clients too, I kind of approach it like, this isn't an end goal. This is, you have to learn to love this process, because this isn't a do this for 3 weeks and then your life is fixed and you're perfect and you'll look perfect forever and that's it. Like, your diet's going to change throughout your life regardless. As you get older, as you have children, as you have different goals, you know, maybe you're rehabbing an injury, maybe you unfortunately have an illness, like your diet is going to change. So to try to pick one strict path and just stick with it forever doesn't make sense. We want people to be more flexible and, you know, more adaptable. And unfortunately, that doesn't sell books as well, or sell tickets to things, but that's the reality of it.
Well said. So why organ meats? You know, so I advocate a mostly animal-based diet. And I don't feel like you have to eat organ meats to be healthy, although they, you know, organ meats are healthy. But when were you introduced to organ meats, and why do you choose to eat them?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. You don't have to eat organ meats to be healthy. I was a pretty healthy person for most of my life, not eating organ meats. I did not grow up eating them, which a lot of people use that as an excuse for why they can't do it now. They're like, well, I didn't grow up eating that, and I don't know if I could get my head around it. And I'm like, you just need to find the right recipe, and you just need to open your mind a little bit, because I didn't grow up eating that. I was very standard American diet my whole life, until, like I said, I kind of found paleo. I sort of got into health and fitness as a career. But I found it because, honestly, looking back, like even when I was eating very conventionally, I always was attracted to things that were like unique or different or stronger tasting. Like being a woman, I really never fell into that, like, that path of like, I have to eat only the white meat with no skin, and it has to be a salad, and I have to eat light. Like, I always was into like dark meat and skin on and rare steaks and, you know, smoked oysters and fish, like strong flavors and things like that. And in my 20s, like I said, when I was, pursuing this career and I was learning about different training methodologies and fitness and strength, I was living in New York, and New York City is like this incredible place for people who love to explore food. So I was trying all these different cuisines, and I was being exposed to all of these different new types of food. And another thing that I discovered really is that although organ meats right now maybe is not exactly a mainstream thing, throughout history and virtually every culture has eaten the entire animal forever and still do, right? Like, it's still very much like a mainstream North American view that organ meats are extreme and weird. In the process of doing this book, you know, I get messages all the time from Middle Eastern, Asian, Mexican cultures who are like, yeah, I eat all this stuff all the time. Like, that's not weird to me, you know? So I was experimenting with it, and I liked to try new food. I felt like it was a very low risk way to have a fun new experience. Like, I just think a lot of people, we've equated different with bad or different with scary. Like, you go to a different ethnic restaurant, you see something on the menu you've never tried before, and you're like, oh no, I won't like that. That's gross. I've never seen that. I've never tried it. No. And I would go to a new restaurant and be like, I've never even heard of that before. Like, let's try it, because what's the harm? You know, you try something, you don't like it, you're right back where you started. you try something and you do like it, and maybe you have really opened up your mind and your life to new experiences. And I think that that can have a snowball effect into the rest of your life too. So anyway, it was just sort of like a natural progression for me to try these new foods, be adventurous, and then I realized I kind of enjoyed them, and I realized that they were incredibly healthy and nutrient dense. And this was kind of, again, coinciding with the work that I was doing professionally and, you know, learning more about how to, because as I mentioned before, we have this real kind of push and pull about plant-based versus animal-based, and you know, people thinking you kind of have to be one camp or the other. And plant-based has become so synonymous with like better for the environment and better for the world. And I don't believe that that's true. I believe that we can, you know, honor our bodies and our physiology and eat animals and still, you know, hopefully support a healthy functioning planet. We just need to make better choices. And one of those better choices you could make, in addition to, you know, eating locally, eating well-raised animals, is eating the entire animal. And if you are somebody who also subscribes to eating less meat, like you recognize that meat is healthy and beneficial and you want to eat it, but maybe you don't want to eat quite as much, a great option is to eat organ meat because it is so nutrient dense that you can eat less of it and get more benefit. So you can have a couple ounces of liver once a week and you're getting a huge amount of nutritional benefit. So it really just makes sense. And then I really just kind of set about trying to find ways to make it easy to prepare and cook and delicious and enjoyable so that people didn't feel like they had to force it or choke it down or, you know, eat a frozen piece of raw liver, you know, as a pill to like get through it, you know, like you can enjoy it. You can have fun with it.
Which is what I do, by the way.
A lot of people still do that.
I don't like the taste of liver, and so I found that if I cut it in pieces and I let it thaw out a little bit, and it just slides down real easy like a pill. Now,
That works too.
also, I know where my cow came from. I would not advise people just buy liver in the grocery store and be eating it raw. But so anyway, a little disclaimer there. So, what do you think is the biggest hurdle for people trying organ meats? Because I hear all kinds of weird stuff like, oh, that's you're going to get some kind of strange disease by, you know, eating liver and heart. And I don't know where all that came from, but what do you feel like is the biggest hurdle?
Yeah, I mean, that could be a whole hour-long podcast in itself. And I do kind of go through a lot of this stuff in the book. Like, the book is not just a cookbook. The whole first, probably third of it is kind of an introduction to the concept, to the history, to the culture of it, and then breaking down every single organ and what its benefits are, how historically it's been prepped and prepared and eaten, and some of the like misconceptions around it. And there's, you know, a lot of it really, again, it's just kind of ignorance. And I don't mean that in a malicious sense. I mean it like we just don't know, because organ meats have fallen out of favor. And so you might remember like some story from 20 years ago, or you read something somewhere, or maybe you just had really gross liver and onions when you were a kid, and that kind of colored your opinion about organ meats forever. All of those things kind of create the culture that we have now, where we are afraid of something that we just don't know much about. And as I said before, we also are in this culture where new or different is bad. We just equate it like this isn't good. Instead of saying like, okay, well, I already eat meat, because again, I speak to the vast majority of North Americans who already eat animal products. It's so arbitrary, you know, to think like I can eat a chicken thigh, I can eat a piece of steak, I can eat some ground beef or pork or whatever, but eating a different part of that same animal that I have accepted has died for my nourishment is terrifying or extreme or gross. You know, it's like that's something that we as consumers need to unpack, you know? And really, it's fallen out of favor for a number of reasons. But I would say, again, high level, most of the fears around eating organs as being sort of dangerous or more prone to like disease or something being wrong with them. Generally, again, I would say that if you are sourcing good meat, wherever you're getting it from, there is not really inherently any increased risk to eating those animals' organs. If you're eating the lowest quality meat and you have no idea where it's coming from, and you're not really sure about the freshness, I mean, I wouldn't really be super recommending you eat any part of that animal anyway. So these days, with the kind of food quality and food control being what it is, it's really pretty safe across the board to eat organ meats.
So if somebody wanted to try some organ meats, like what's a good first step? I mean, obviously liver can, you know, it's got a unique taste. I feel like after recently, you know, eating some heart, that like it was good. Like, I mean, it was very similar to a regular steak, a little bit different texture, but I feel like that would be a great starting point for people. Although just the thought of it, I mean, you know, a lot of people are just repulsed by it just because it's a heart. But where do you usually have people get started as kind of a first step?
Yeah, I mean, that's you hit it right there. That's what I tell people a lot of times is to start with heart because heart is a muscle meat as well as an organ. So if you're already used to eating steak, if you're already used to eating the muscle of a of an animal, that's it's the same thing. It's just a more nutrient dense cut, and it does have kind of a beefy texture. It has a little bit of a stronger flavor, but it's also incredibly versatile. You can slice it and pan fry it. You can cut it and cube it and barbecue it on the grill. You can dehydrate it and make delicious jerky. I have a heart jerky recipe in the book that is so good and so easy to make. I also have a couple other kind of like higher level recommendations for people who are actually interested in giving it a try, but they're a little intimidated or don't know where to start. One would be if you have access, if you're going out to restaurants, go to a restaurant and have a professional make organ meats for you so that you know how delicious it can actually taste and you can enjoy it without having to worry about sourcing and cooking it yourself. If you go to a Mexican restaurant, there is probably tongue tacos on the menu. You can probably find sweetbreads at a French restaurant. You can probably find bone marrow. You can probably find chicken liver mousse or pate on a charcuterie board. Like, just kind of keep your eyes open at different restaurants and see, just try different things and have somebody else do the work for you. That's a good recommendation. Another one is to start small in terms of the actual animals that you're sourcing organs from. So if you want to try liver or heart, go with chicken or turkey or duck. A smaller animal is going to have a milder flavor than a larger animal. Even lamb, smaller animals like a lamb liver is gonna or heart is gonna taste much milder than a buffalo or a cow liver or heart. That's just the reality of it. So a lot of people think like if you go for organs, like just go straight in and eat like raw cow liver. It's like just have chicken liver mousse. It's delicious. It is incredibly nutrient dense, and most pate or mousse is made with a bunch of fat and maybe some like cream or butter, if you can tolerate those things. It's incredibly decadent and it's delicious. You're getting a ton of nutrients. It doesn't have to always be the most basic, choke it down for the nutrition experience. You can actually go and just enjoy it and know that what you're eating happens to have a lot of nutrition in it as well. So those are a couple recommendations. Definitely go for heart, have a professional make it for you, and start with smaller, milder tasting animals.
Okay. So talk about some of the things that we can eat on an animal, say just like a cow, because most of the times these organs are just thrown away. And there's, you know, some things I haven't tried yet. I want to, like thymus gland and different things. But talk about like of a cow. I mean, you know, what are some things that you feel like we miss out on? I mean, because I know that, you know, some people eat kidneys and, you know, we talked about heart, and again, there's thymus gland and spleen. I mean, there's all kinds of these organs. So, I mean, what are some good ones you feel like we're missing out on?
I mean, you just named a lot of them. Like, you can pretty much eat it all. Like, unless we're talking about, I mean, even bones, you put them in the crock pot and you make bone marrow. I mean, that's it. You can eat a lot of most animals. Some I think personally are more delicious and easier to prepare than others. I mean, I personally am not, and I feel silly saying this because I wrote this book on organ meats and then I'm going to say there's things I don't like, but I personally am not a huge fan of kidney. Like I know a lot of people who love kidney and they can't eat liver. I like the taste of liver. I can't really get my head around kidney too much. I have a couple recipes because I know people enjoy it. I'm not a huge fan, but like sweetbreads, for example, which is like pancreas and thymus gland, those are very delicate, mild organs that actually kind of take on the flavor of whatever you're cooking it with. They're not strong tasting organs at all. Brain, so like veal brain, that's a delicacy that is actually very mild tasting and delicious. My experience has been with prepping and recipe development is that oftentimes the scarier looking organs are actually the most delicious and the most mild tasting. And the ones that don't look that scary are the stronger, kind of more intense ones. Another really good example that I just mentioned is tongue. Tongue can be a very intimidating cut for individuals to prep and make at home, because at the end of the day, if you're buying a lamb or a cow or a buffalo tongue, it looks like a tongue. It's very recognizable what it is. And that can be intimidating for people who are used to just eating like slabs of meat that doesn't really look like anything that used to be an animal, right? But tongue is one of the most delicious cuts of meat. And if you, again, like if you go to a Mexican restaurant and you get some like deliciously cooked, shredded beef tongue, it's like, it's so delicious. It's just anybody who's eaten meat is like, if you didn't tell them what it was, they would be like, this is fantastic. What is it? And then of course you scare them away and tell them what it is. People, we're missing out on a lot of things. Blood is an ingredient that's used in a lot of recipes historically to make other flavors richer. So I have a savory and a sweet blood pudding recipe in the book. It's a chocolate blood pudding that's actually interpreted from a Italian recipe that's very popular, and it's sort of added into chocolate pudding to make the flavor deeper and richer. You don't taste the blood. There's not very much in it. It was one of the more popular desserts that I made, and folks that I really had to convince people to try that one, because when I told them there was blood in it, and everyone across the board was like, this was delicious. I would never have known. So again, it's like we just kind of like unpack our fears around things and just give ourselves the opportunity to kind of step outside our comfort zone a little bit. You might find food that you think is delicious. And more importantly, you might find food that really, really benefits your health.
So what is your favorite as far as organ meats are concerned?
I mean, based on what I eat the most, I have to say I have a chicken liver mousse recipe in the book that is probably the most popular, and it's what I make frequently. Like I feed it to my 9-month-old. I eat it all the time. It's just delicious and super easy to make. And I just know that I'm getting, again, like chicken liver, similar to beef liver, has so many vitamins and minerals and just like antioxidants, and it's such a nutritional powerhouse. And I know that if I just make this once a month, even and eat a couple ounces of this, you know, for a week or two, it's like a multivitamin. It's like a real food multivitamin that is contributing to my health. And one thing that's again, this is just kind of on the top of my head because I just had a kid and I get a lot of questions about how I ate during pregnancy and how I supported my own health and all of those things. When you're building a new human, liver is really high in folate, which is a really important nutrient for women to have when they're pregnant that helps the development of the baby, right? So it's like nature's prenatal vitamin. It's just so healthy. So I do a lot of chicken liver mousse. I probably eat heart, like a beef heart, probably once a month. I'll do some different preparation from the book. And the tongue, again, like slow cook, shred it up. I don't know, put it in some tacos or omelet or with your eggs. Delicious. And you know, people think that because I'm kind of like the organ meat lady and I wrote this book that I eat organs like for every meal all day, every day. Maybe when I'm prepping for the book I do, but otherwise, you know, I'm eating some form of organ meats maybe once a week. You don't have to do it all the time. It's just something that's kind of enhanced my nutrition rather than like completely taking it over, you know?
So people are probably asking if, you know, they want to eat more organ meats, like, you know, where's the best place to get these? Do they just need to talk to their local butcher and get these organ meats? Is that where you get yours from?
Yeah, that's a great start. If you are lucky enough to have a butcher shop locally. I mean, when I was, again, recipe developing for the book, I went everywhere because I was looking for a lot of different, ingredients that maybe weren't as easy to find. So make friends with a local butcher, you know, go in and ask them questions, and you might find that stuff already is there, and you just, honestly, your eyes have gone right over it, because when I was going into some of these butcher shops, I was amazed at what I was finding. You know, like I said, veal brain, I didn't have to order that. That was just there. I asked the butcher for chicken skin. I made fried chicken skin, like they were like nacho chips. Delicious. They're going to have that because people are asking for chicken without the skin. The best part, the tastiest, most nutrient-dense part, they're saying, I don't want that, so I'm going to get it. You know, so anyway, yeah, butcher shop's a great place. If you have a, like a local farmer's market and there are actual like kind of farms or farmers coming in that are selling directly to you, chances are great that they either have it or they'd be happy to bring it if you ask for it. Another place that you can check is like local ethnic markets. So if you go to Asian markets, African markets, Middle Eastern markets, a lot of these places carry more nose to tail options because culturally they're just eating it. So that was a great resource for me. And then finally, if you're in the States, there are a number of online, you know, grass fed, really like humanely raised meat purveyors that will also provide some organ meat options. So like US Wellness Meats is one that's great. There's one called Force of Nature that actually does a ground meat and organ blend. So if you're going to make like burgers or meatballs or something like that, like you can just order this like pre-ground mix already, and make the food you already like, and it'll be just sort of a little bit more nutritious maybe. So yeah, you can do your research and find what's local to you, but again, nationwide now, like you can get this stuff delivered directly to your door if you are interested.
Sure. Okay. So I'm curious, you know, when I think of people eating organ meats, I think of people like the Liver King, which, you know, for those not familiar with the Liver King, you know, he's this big bearded muscular guy, you know, lives ancestral. So they don't think of people like yourself, you know, young, attractive females. And so
I'm trying to be like Liver King, but I do some of his workouts sometimes, you know, yeah. I try my best.
Oh, wow. So, you know, I wouldn't think you're the stereotypical person of, you know, to be eating brain and heart and, you know, and all this stuff. So what kind of reactions do you get from people when they learn about you eating this way?
I mean, I love that you asked that question because I think, you know, I'm not trying to add any more importance to what I'm doing than I feel, but this is why I want to be out here talking about it, because there are so many people who could benefit from eating more animal protein and eating more organ meats who will not do it because the only people out there talking about it are people that look like the Liver King. All due respect to Brian, I know him. He can be polarizing, right? And there are other people out there that are, you know, they talk about carnivore and they say, you have to eat this way and only this. If you don't, you're stupid. And you have to eat this liver every day and you have to eat it raw. And, you know, it's very, again, polarizing. And it's provocative. It gets people's attention because he's this big, you know, muscular, sweaty dude and he eats liver. But it's not necessarily speaking to everybody. And like I said, I think that women especially, we have nutritional needs that are not being met by this mainstream kind of propaganda, I gotta say, around plant-based eating. We have iron requirements and magnesium requirements and folate requirements and things that we need to have healthy, functioning, cycling bodies, right? Whether or not we want to have babies is not, it doesn't even factor into this. If we want to have healthy, functioning bodies and a cycle that is a very strong indicator of our health, right? We need to be eating foods that support those things. And we're being told to eat salads with chickpeas in it. And so I think that if women who are struggling, who feel like they aren't getting the right nourishment, who are hungry all the time, whose cycles are all messed up, if they go online and they start looking at this animal-based thing and they see somebody who looks a little bit more like them and who is, I think, coming at it from a like an educated but a moderate point of view. Like, I'm not telling you to never eat a salad again. I'm not telling you that you have to look like this person or work out like this person. I'm just telling you that maybe it could be beneficial and it also can be healthy and ethical and sustainable and okay for you to add some more protein onto your plate, maybe even consider adding some liver. Because I've just seen with myself personally and anecdotally through my work, I have seen women especially, but other people's lives completely changed when they stop caring about like what the mainstream trends tell them to eat and they start listening to what their body's actually telling them to do and eat more animal protein. It's just incredible what can happen. So I feel strongly that, like, you know, people like me should be out here doing this too. And so, yeah, I get some interesting comments and some reactions, and like especially at the beginning, I think when I was experimenting and sharing it online and on social media, I got a lot of barf emojis. I got a lot of people telling me I was crazy. But I don't, my personal value and my, how I feel about myself is not, does not have anything to do with, you know, what people on social media tell me or about what I eat. I eat because I believe it's the best, most optimal way to eat. And I do the best that I can, and I make the best choices that I can. And it's turned my life around and made my life much more healthy and made me a more robust, resilient person eating this way. And so that's what I'm sharing with other people. And I don't want to be dogmatic and I don't want to be condescending. I just want to share what I know and hope that it helps people.
Well, that's great. And you look great, not to mention the fact that you just had a baby. I mean, 9 months ago, they even more impressive. So I know people can't see, but I mean, you look like you're in very good shape. You're muscular. So on that note, take us through a day in the life of Ashley. I mean, you talked a little bit about what you eat, but you know, what does a breakfast, lunch, and dinner look like? And then maybe your exercise routine.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was more intense in probably every way prior to the pandemic, prior to my kid, just because it was, you know, it's always a priority in my life. That's always the case. And I think that that's important for people to understand that if you want to be healthy and you want to look a certain way, it does have to be a priority all the time. It just, it's going to, maybe other things are going to take different priorities, right? So it, certainly over the last, I guess, year and a half being pregnant and having this baby, that's been a priority, which isn't to say that my health is no longer important. It just means like I'm not crushing hour and a half workouts every day, maybe like I was 2 years ago or something. But with that said, I have had a focus on like weightlifting probably for, I don't know, 15 years. And that consistency is what has helped carry me through a pandemic where my gym was closed for 2 years straight and a pregnancy where I couldn't do a lot of the things that I wanted to do. So I guess kind of the long story short is like the consistency of doing, as you know, the most things you can right over time is going to really pay off. So like walking a lot, as much as you can, eating protein first, always, getting good sleep and lifting weight and like doing weight bearing exercise is kind of just like, that's the foundation. So yeah, it's a little bit different, but I mean, right now I don't really ascribe to any kind of like fasting thing. Again, I'm breastfeeding. I have really high energy demands. Yeah. I've always been an eater. I'm hungry. I don't, you know, I think fasting can be beneficial. I just don't think it's as much of a sort of like answer for everybody as maybe some people would lead you to believe. But I like to eat like, you know, my breakfasts are usually eggs and avocado. If there's any kind of like meat hanging around from other meals, I'll kind of throw that in. Like I said, sometimes I might have oatmeal if I'm hungry. Pretty much always eggs and avocado. And then lunch and dinner are kind of interchangeable. Like they're just always some meat with like maybe some vegetables on the side. So I like sweet potatoes. I like Brussels sprouts. I'll eat some asparagus. I'll eat some salad sometimes. My husband is, you know, a perfect example of how we can like eat the same but different. So we would both say like we're carnivore-ish, paleo-ish people. He actually likes to eat a lot more vegetables than I do. So his dinner will be a massive salad with some like mackerel and like a ton of olive oil on it and, you know, a bunch of different vegetables. And I might have like the like a big piece of mackerel and like maybe a little bit of, I don't know, like I said, sweet potato on the side. So that's basically it. And I mean, you know, again, I'm kind of, I'll snack when I want to, you know, I'll eat nuts, I'll eat, I'll have a protein shake. In the book, I have like snacks and sides and like even like protein, homemade protein bars that you can make. Like I like to eat, like I like to snack personally because I'm running around all day and I don't necessarily have time to sit and eat big meals. I think that those details matter less. Like a lot of times we get stuck on like how many meals should we eat and like meal timing, and that stuff can be important, but I think those are tweaks. I think the biggest thing and the one thing that I tell, especially women, when they're just like, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to start. I'm like, just always focus on protein first. If you're hungry, eat protein. If you're sitting down to a meal, put protein on your plate first. Just always, you know, I've said something on social media before and it's kind of a joke, but not really, you know, if you're not hungry enough to eat a steak, you're probably not hungry. And the reason I say that is because we could always eat a cookie or chips or like some handful of carbs of some kind, right? That's how our bodies work. That's how these hyperpalatable foods work. It's so easy to eat carbs, which are going to, they aren't inherently bad, but maybe, you know, they're not serving you the way you want to. So, you know, focus on protein first. You can snack on protein and, you know, just focus on that and you're probably going to be satiated. You're probably going to be nourished. It's going to help support this muscle growth or muscle maintenance. And then the rest is just kind of details, I think.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So you host a podcast is it Muscle Maven?
Yeah, Muscle Maven Radio. Muscle okay. Maven is my kind of like online handle.
Okay. All right. So, talk about that. Just, you know, what kind of, what you talk about on the podcast, maybe some notable guests you've had.
Yeah, it's evolved. You know, it used to be, I don't know any readers who maybe remember a publication called Paleo Magazine that, kind of changed at the beginning of the pandemic, but it used to be sort of the biggest source for like ancestral health paleo news. And I hosted that for many years. And then in the pandemic, I bought the podcast and rebranded it to myself because I wanted to be able to expand and talk to more people about more things, just still health, fitness, wellness, all of those things. You know, I've interviewed like anything from functional medicine doctors to authors to professional coaches to professional athletes and MMA fighters. You know, I've interviewed surfer Laird Hamilton was kind of a big one for me. I've interviewed Mark Sisson and Rob Wolf. You know, I really enjoy MMA, so I've interviewed a couple of like professional fighters and you know, just anybody that has something interesting and innovative and I think helpful to say or a story to share in the world of strength and nutrition and wellness. I do it for myself. I'm sure you're probably very similar. Like I do the podcast because I want to talk to interesting people and learn. And then I'm like, yeah, might as well record this and share it with other people and maybe they can learn too.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, yeah. Same exact reason, you know, people ask, cause I have a full-time clinic, you know, that I'm in. And so people ask me, you know, why do you do that podcast? And I'm like, I love meeting like-minded people, you know, like yourself and I love talking about health and wellness and longevity. And so just visiting about that is a great thing. So, well, very nice. Well, I love what you're doing. And so, the book is It Takes Guts. And I'm sure people can find it on Amazon.
Both books, It Takes Guts, Carnivorous, you can get Barnes & Noble, Amazon, local bookstores, anywhere that, you know, good books are sold. Hopefully they have it.
Okay. And then your website is ashleyvanhouten.com. Mm-hmm. And that's Ashley is A-S-H-L-E-I-G-H. Van Houten, V-A-N-H-O-U-T-E-N. I'll have it in the show notes. So, and so that's where people can find you and work with you. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, you can basically get any information you want on the website. And then if you want to reach out more directly, I'm usually the only place really I'm online is Instagram. And that's at the Muscle Maven. You can talk to me there.
Awesome. All right. Well, as we wrap up, I always ask my guest, if they could give us one health tip that could make us healthier today, what would you say to that?
I mean, I guess I just repeat what I've been saying this whole time, and it's two because, you know, I'm kind of a long-winded person. I can't just answer one sentence ever. So I would say the two things that I've mostly talked about today are eat more protein, you know, focus on protein, and also listen to your body because 99.
So I apologize for Ashley getting cut off. We had some technical difficulties at the very end of the podcast, but as you heard, she recommended eating more protein, and I think the other thing she was trying to say is listen to your body, as it will tell you what it needs most of the time. So appreciate Ashley coming on, and appreciate you guys listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to FitRx. I invite you to share this with friends and family. you would like, you can check out our website at vibrantlifedc.com, or you can email me at drgreg@vibrantlifedc.com.